Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich of Crime Talk, and we have a busy docket today. First, the Ahmed Arbery case in Georgia. Second, Lori Vallow's mother and sister speak, and you can't wait to hear what they have to say. Third, a Texas woman released from custody for contempt of court. Fourth, a Minnesota man's wife was going to leave him, so what's the logical thing to do? That's right, fake her disappearance. Fifth, what not to do when you're having a fight with your wife. Sixth, a bizarre case out of North Carolina. And according to the Supreme Court, political retaliation is not a crime. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich of Crime Talk, and thank you for tuning in. We have a huge docket today, but before we do that, yes, we're going to ask you to please subscribe. Hit that little bell so that you receive notifications, and as always, leave us a comment about what we discussed today, because we do read your comments, and we are interested in what you have to say. First on the docket, the case of Ahmed Arbery down in Georgia. This is a case where I'm not sure why the prosecutors are dragging their feet in filing charges in this particular case, but let's talk about it and see maybe if there's some reason why we can explain the delay in bringing of charges. So Ahmed Arbery, by everyone's accounts, was a runner. He likes to run in his spare time. By all accounts, Mr. Arbery spent much of his spare time running for exercise in the city of Brunswick in Glynn County, Georgia. This is down on the southeast coast near Savannah. And that was the case on February 23rd when Mr. Arbery was spotted jogging through the neighborhood of Gregory McMichael. Now, Mr. McMichael apparently believed that Arbery looked like a suspect in a spat of recent break-ins, according to a police report published by the New York Times. The problem with that story is there's only apparently been one burglary reported in Glynn County in the Satilla Shores neighborhood between January 1 and February 23rd, and involved a pistol taken from a pickup truck outside of Travis McMichael's home in Brunswick. Now, Mr. McMichael, 64, called his son Travis McMichael, 34, and they armed themselves with a handgun and a shotgun. They then chased Arbery in a truck, according to the report, and Gregory McMichael told police that he shouted to Arbery to stop, stop, we want to talk to you, according to their statements when they pulled up beside him in their pickup truck. There also may have been a third person involved in this pursuit. Travis McMichael stepped out of the truck with his shotgun, and that's when Gregory McMichael alleged that Arbery attacked Travis McMichael and they began fighting over the shotgun, according to the police report. Now, Travis McMichael fired twice, according to the police. Arbery then fell down on the pavement and died of his wounds. Now, a video has surfaced of this encounter, and I cannot imagine why charges have not been filed in this particular case. Well, the district attorney says that he expects to present this case to the grand jury for consideration of criminal charges, and he intends to do that. He states that he's been unable to convene a grand jury due to the COVID-19 pandemic, where one could possibly become suspicious that the McMichaels are receiving some sort of special treatment and not being arrested pending indictment is possibly for the fact that Greg McMichael previously served as a former police detective as well as a district attorney investigator in Brunswick. The district attorney for Glynn County, Jackie Johnson, recused herself from this case because McMichael worked as an investigator in her office and retired last year. One would possibly think if you did not have a relationship as a former police officer with the district attorney that perhaps you would more than likely be arrested when you get in a vehicle, approach somebody with a firearm, and ultimately wind up shooting them. It's going to be difficult to argue self-defense, in my humble opinion, based upon the video in this particular situation, when you are the initial aggressor. Now, the video that's been released clearly shows the McMichaels getting out of the vehicle and having an altercation with Mr. Arbery. And even if the claim that Mr. Arbery, there was some sort of struggle as it relates to the shotgun, it doesn't necessarily appear from that based upon my quick perusal of this video. Now, it really doesn't matter. You certainly have a right, if somebody points a gun at you, to tell them to put it away and move along your business. These people had no authority to stop anyone and question them, let alone at gunpoint. And why these two individuals are not in custody at this point is a little surprising. Hopefully now that this video has come out, that the district attorney will get down there and get some action rolling on this case. Mark my word, if Mr. McMichael had not been a police officer as well as an investigator for the district attorney's office, I guarantee you that any one of those individuals who got in a truck, chased somebody down with firearms, and not called the police would be arrested. If that were you or me, they would have been in custody, and they'd be sitting in custody waiting for a grand jury to convene. One of the tenets of our judicial system is it doesn't matter who your dad is, what your last name is, who your former employer was, it doesn't matter. We're all seen in the same light, and justice should be equal, and there should be some justice for Mr. Arbery. There's no indication that he was doing anything wrong other than going for a run for exercise. We're going to follow this case because this case is going to be huge. Next on the docket, Lori Vallow's mother and sister speak. Lori Vallow's mother, Janice Cox, and her sister, Summer Shiflett, have basically come out and said that they would love to find out where the children are from Lori Vallow, but unfortunately, she just can't do so because the jail calls are monitored and recorded. Yes, that's right. They are apparently giving her the benefit of the doubt, and they believe that if these jail calls were not recorded, that the case would be solved. Understand, family will stand behind family. But here we're talking about two children, 17 and 7, Tylee and JJ. These children have not been seen from or heard from family since last year. This whole mess has simply been produced because Lori Vallow won't say where the children are. All she has to do is say, these are where the children are, and they're in good health, and this matter would all but be done. You would think that her attorney would say, the children are okay, let's produce them. What danger could they possibly be in? And I'm sure that danger would dissipate dramatically if, in fact, they were found by the police authorities. The more logical option is that something nefarious has taken place with Tylee and JJ, and they will not be found alive. Yes, Ms. Vallow has a presumption of innocence, and no one will defend anyone's rights under the Constitution more than me, but this is a case that if the children were okay, you simply produce them. There's no indication to say that any of these children are in danger or that there's any sort of duress that's keeping you from producing these children anyway. Next on the docket, a Texas woman has been released for a contempt charge down in Texas. For those of you who have not heard, Texas Governor Greg Abbott issued an executive order Thursday retroactively eliminating jail time for citizens who violate the stay-at-home rules. This was a result of the arrest and jailing of Shelley Luther, who was jailed for 7 days and fined $7,000 for reopening her business against court orders. Shortly after Governor Abbott's announcement, the Supreme Court ordered that Ms. Luther's be released. This may also affect Ana Isabel Castro Garcia and Brenda Stephanie Mata, who were arrested in Laredo, Texas the other day for providing cosmetic services inside their homes. You may recall we discussed that case last week. So, Ms. Luthers was before a Judge Eric Moya, and the judge asked Ms. Luthers to admit that her decision to reopen her salon was selfish, and the court ordered her to apologize. Ms. Luthers was unrepentant, explaining that she reopened on April 24th because she hadn't earned income since the county's stay-at-home order was set in March, and she applied for the federal Paycheck Protection Plan loan but hadn't received the aid until Sunday. She also explained that she was opening her business at reduced capacity and with a number of new safety protocols in place to protect all staff as well as customers. Ms. Luthers stated to the court, "I couldn't feed my family, and my stylist couldn't feed their families." Ms. Luthers stated, "I have much respect for the law and courts. I have never been in this position before, and it's not someplace that I want to be. But I have to disagree with you, sir, when you say that I'm selfish for feeding my kids, and it's not selfish. I have hairstylists that are going hungry because they'd rather feed their kids. So, sir, if you think the law is more important than kids getting fed, then please go ahead with your decision, but I'm not going to shut the salon." Ms. Luthers was immediately placed into custody and booked into the Dallas County Jail, where, of course, there are 248 inmates who have tested positive for the coronavirus. Judge Moya obviously didn't like the fact that somebody was questioning his orders. Now, we talked about this early on, and boy, did I take a lot of flack from it. So many of these executive orders are simply modifications. It's a policy decision saying that the agencies under the governor would not enforce certain provisions under the law, basically suspending enforcement. The governor cannot make laws unilaterally. Remember our civics lessons. It's got to go through both the state house and then the state senate, just like in the federal system. Then the governor has to sign it for it to become a law. And now we have a hodgepodge of laws or executive orders coming down from the state level, the city level, and other county municipalities as well. So now, for example, when I went to see my barber the other day, I said, "I was a little surprised you're open." He says, "Well, the governor's office said this, the city said this, and the county said this, and nobody can figure out what exactly it means." So he opened up, reduced capacity, taking precautions so that no one gets sick. It's called common sense. I said that at the time, that stupid laws will be ignored. Arbitrary and capricious laws will be ignored. Exercise common sense by washing your hands, but it's okay to go pick up your food at a restaurant where you can't eat, where this person delivering the food or handing it to you is coming in contact with probably more people than if they had a limited number of tables. Makes no sense. You can't run a hair salon, but it's okay to go to Walmart or to Costco. Tell me how that makes any sense. It can't. It doesn't. It's arbitrary and capricious. And watch as the time progresses, there are going to be lawsuits, not against just insurance companies for failing to pay loss of income type of claims, but there are going to be cases against the government, the municipalities, the cities, as well as the state for shutting a restaurant down, for shutting bars down, for shutting everything down. Now, granted, the government didn't know exactly what they were getting into. They said it would last 2 weeks. Now it's lasted literally 2 months. People cannot go that long without an income. And $1,200 from the government, if you got it, is simply not enough to pay the bills. If you're fortunate enough to have employment during that time or you are busy enough, but there are now some 30 million people that have been affected by these arbitrary and capricious laws. And yes, nobody wants anybody to die, but it's clearly the situation where if you looked at the high-risk individuals and protected them as opposed to shutting everything down. Our laws have been created to impose punishment for people that violate the laws for actions they do. Here you have people being ordered to stay home, literally what amounts to house arrest on the whim and executive order of the governor. Now, we'll see where things shake out. I was given a lot of heat by a lot of people when I said these things were arbitrary and capricious, but the bottom line is I think that's coming out. And as you can see, if wherever you are, because I've been coming to the office every day since there have been stay-at-home orders, and there is traffic on the road again. There are slowdowns on the highway. People have had enough. They know how to use common sense. Let them choose. And if you don't want to go outside and risk coming in contact with somebody, maybe only when you go to the store to pick up your food or it even gets delivered, then you can choose to do so. But everybody else who needs to get back to life and to living needs to be able to do that. Next on the docket, Joshua Fury. He's 28, and he was married to Maria Fury, and she was going to leave him. So what's the logical thing to do? That's right. Everybody lawyer up. Everybody realize that sometimes things just don't work out, and it's time to move on. No, Joshua was not that kind of guy. He apparently threatened to kill himself if Maria left him. Very narcissistic. But needless to say, Joshua didn't do the rational thing. No, he decided it'd be best to fake his wife's disappearance. According to arrest affidavits, Mr. Fury reported his wife missing. He claimed that he left home for work at about 11 a.m. to 11:30 a.m., and that his wife said she was going to take a walk. But Maria Fury wasn't there when suspect Joshua returned to work, according to his initial account. Her cell phone, however, was purportedly on the kitchen counter. The defendant reportedly biked around the route that Maria would have been walking to try and find her, but to no avail. He ultimately ended up calling the police. Ultimately, the police obtained a search warrant as well as bringing in canine cadaver dogs. The dogs sensed human remains in a crawl space on a lower level. Another search warrant led cops excavate the area to discover that the victim had been buried in a dirt floor covered in plastic. The results of the autopsy are still pending. However, Joshua actually confessed and stated that it's going to be results of asphyxiation from the duct tape and the plastic bag that he put over Maria's mouth and nose. In Joshua's further confession, he stated that he strangled Maria because they were having an argument and he said that he felt a snap. He's ultimately charged with second-degree murder, alleging that the murder was in fact committed with intent but not premeditated. Joshua also stated that he was feeling a little depressed and actually considered suicide after the murder. He did tell the police that it took some 2.5 hours to kill Maria as well as dispose of her body. He used the duct tape, which was the same duct tape that he was going to use to put missing persons' photos around the neighborhood. Sometimes, gentlemen, you need to just realize that the relationship is over and maybe do a little self-introspection to think, why did this not work out, versus go ahead and killing your spouse. Makes no sense, and nothing good ever comes from it. Next on the docket, what not to do when you're having an argument with your wife. Well, Earl Thomas, a professional football player currently with the Baltimore Ravens, was apparently having a dispute regarding some of his drinking habits with his wife, Nina. And this all took place on April 13th. And apparently, Mr. Thomas was picked up by his brother, Seth, and they went to an Airbnb in the Austin area. Nina, not amused by some of the Instagram videos that were being posted between Earl, Seth, and some other women, ultimately led Nina, along with two of her friends, to track down her husband, Earl. When they got to the home, she had a firearm. She believed that there was no round in the chamber, but in fact there was, but the magazine was removed. Her friend had a knife, and ultimately when they went into the home, she wound up pointing the gun at Earl Thomas's head, as well as some of the women that Nina found, her husband, her brother-in-law, as well as several other naked ladies in the bed. Needless to say, Nina was not amused, and Earl had to ultimately wrestle the firearm away from Nina after she reportedly stated that the women had something coming to them for their actions. Nina was ultimately arrested for burglary of a residence with intent to commit aggravated assault with a deadly weapon therein. As we talked about last week, had she simply gone in and just maybe been in the yard, maybe a criminal trespass or a menacing. But the mere fact that she went in the house, a dwelling with the intent to commit a crime therein, i.e. the gun, it's now a burglary, a much more severe felony conviction than had she not entered the dwelling in this particular case. So this clearly is a lesson in what not to do. Mr. Earl Thomas clearly exercising some poor judgment, more than likely induced from his alcohol consumption, since that was the basis of the argument, was not making good decisions. Nina obviously appears to be stone cold sober and was still making some poor decisions based upon emotion, not what anyone should do when they're having an argument with their spouse. Most domestic violence reports, when you read them, involve anger and alcohol. Doesn't lead to a good combination at all. Another bizarre case out of North Carolina. Brian Sluss, the ex-boyfriend of a North Carolina woman who went missing last year, has been arrested and charged with her murder. Monica Moynan, 23, went missing last year. Sluss was the last person to see Monica alive before she was discovered missing in July of 2019 after her mother requested a welfare check. The 23-year-old's mother told police she had not spoken to Monica since April and that she believed Sluss had been texting people pretending to be her for months. Upon execution of search warrants of the residence of Monica, they discovered that there was a positive pregnancy test in Monica's home. Police actually believe the fact that she was pregnant may have been a factor which led up to her death. Now, Sluss allegedly admitted to pretending to be Monica for months via text messages to friends. He changed his story several times regarding her whereabouts, claiming at one point that she had become addicted to cocaine and had run away. He had told others that she was in fact in a drug treatment center. And at the time of Monica's disappearance, she had a domestic violence protective order against Sluss. And Monica's body still has not been found, and the police are asking for anyone's help if they have any information which may lead to her whereabouts. I've handled lots of domestic cases over the years, too many to even count. But one thing is for certain, most people do not follow these protective orders. They provide no more protection than the paper that they're written on. If someone chooses not to follow it, it means nothing. And you can't get a protection order and then continue to have contact with the person that you say that you need protection from. It's what they refer to as you can't get a protection order to use it as a shield and a sword in the sense that you want to get it for your protection, but then still have contact and then say, oh, somebody has in fact violated the protection order. That doesn't play well. But it also shows that if you are going to the court to get a protection order, you need to make sure that you have actual protection. If somebody shows up to your house going to do you harm, holding up a piece of paper is not going to protect you. You need to call the police immediately. Next on the docket, the Supreme Court says that political retaliation is not a crime. And what happened in this particular case doesn't happen very often. It was a 9-0 unanimous decision. And that was the case of Kelly versus the United States. And for those who do not recall the facts, let me tell them to you and we'll explain why the court stated it was not a crime. So during the former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie's 2013 reelection campaign, his deputy chief of staff, Bridget Ann Kelly, avidly courted Democrat mayors for their endorsement. But Fort Lee's mayor refused to back the governor's campaign. Determined to punish the mayor, Kelly, Port Authority Deputy Executive Director William Baroni, and another Port Authority official, David Wildstein, decided to reduce from 3 to 1 the number of lanes long reserved at the George Washington Bridge's toll plaza for Fort Lee's morning commute. To disguise their efforts at political retribution, Wildstein devised a cover story. The lane realignment was for a traffic study. As part of the cover story, the defendants asked Port Authority traffic engineers to collect some numbers about the effect on the changes. At the suggestion of a Port Authority manager, they also agreed to pay an extra toll collector overtime so that Fort Lee's one remaining lane would not be shut down if the collector on duty needs a break. The lane realignment caused 4 days of gridlock in Fort Lee and only ended when the Port Authority executive director learned of the scheme. Baroni and Kelly were convicted in federal court of wire fraud, fraud on a federally funded program or entity, the Port Authority in this particular case, and conspiracy to commit each of those crimes. The Third Circuit affirmed the convictions. Now remember, one little attorney representing these individuals kept making the argument that there was no crime. And he's poo-pooed by the courts at the trial court level, at the appellate courts, and ultimately gets to the United States Supreme Court because one little defense attorney keeps making an argument. The United States Supreme Court, as I stated, agreed 9-0 with Kelly's attorney's arguments. And the court held that because the scheme here did not aim to obtain money or property, Baroni and Kelly could not have violated the federal program fraud or wire fraud laws. The court went on to state, the federal wire fraud statute makes it a crime to affect, with the use of wires, telephone communications, or any sort of electronic communication, any scheme or artifice to defraud or for obtaining money or property by means of false or fraudulent pretenses, representation, or promises. That'd be in violation of 18 U.S. Code, Section 1343. Similarly, the court notes, the program fraud statute bars obtaining by fraud of federally funded program or entity. These statutes are limited in scope to the protection of property rights and do not authorize federal prosecutors to set standards of disclosure and good government for local and state officials. Basically, what the court is saying is not everything that a politician does is a crime, and that really your remedy is to vote people out of office if you choose to do so. The court held that under either provision, the government had to show not only that Baroni and Kelly engaged in deception, but that the object of their fraud was money or property. The court stated that the realignment or access of the lanes was an exercise of regulatory power, a reallocation of the lanes between different groups or drivers. And since there was no taking of the government property, no crime. So as long as politicians want to punish a political opponent, or maybe even the constituents of people that don't want to go along with it, as long as they are not taking any property for themselves, then it's probably going to be okay. This is a narrowing of the corruption statutes that the Supreme Court has been narrowing over the years by the Supreme Court. I know that's kind of in the weeds, but it's super important, and it shows you that one little attorney making an argument saying there is no property rights can make its way all the way to the Supreme Court. Like we've talked about, whether it was Gideon V. Wainwright, who pro se wrote a petition to the United States Supreme Court and said, give me a lawyer, and it became the law of the land. And in Washington State, there was a case called Crawford v. Washington. And one attorney kept making the argument to say, you have to bring the victim in to testify. My client has a right to confrontation under the Confrontation Clause of the United States Constitution. Judges, DAs, appellate judges poo-pooed that for years and said, good enough for us, works for us. The United States Supreme Court said, no, the confrontation clause is essential. You must produce witnesses. The little note there is, if you think you're right, press on. And now for our dumb criminal contestant of the day. And I'm actually going to try and keep a straight face during this because I may start laughing. But an Ohio woman was placed under arrest after reportedly calling 911 to ask for help extinguishing a fire in her crotch. Katrina Morgan, 50, apparently called the police after consuming some alcohol, alleging that, quote, her crotch was ablaze. Now, she wasn't as articulate as I was in describing her crotch. Miss Morgan asked the cops if the fire department's hose is working and said, quote, I need somebody to come put it out with their hose, according to police reports. As stated, when the police arrived, they noticed that Miss Morgan had been at home drinking with a friend. Miss Morgan was ultimately arrested for false reports and disrupting police operations. So Miss Morgan is our dumb criminal contestant of the day. You just can't make this stuff up. And I'm not sure what else there is to say. I'm not even sure if there's a teachable moment here. Thanks for watching. As we mentioned yesterday, if you'd like to support us, go to our Patreon page. We are going to have some private and exclusive events on the Patreon for people that want to support this page. Additionally, if you want to get some Crime Talk merchandise, like the mug that would go to our Dumb Criminal Contestant of the Week, or some really cool t-shirts or sweatshirts, go to the link below there at Teespring, and when you order it, they ship that stuff out to you right away. Thanks for watching. We know there's lots of things that you could be doing, so the fact that you take the time to watch us does not go unnoticed and is greatly appreciated. Have a great day.